must have been about 8 or 9 years ago, I guess. He asked me to do some teaching, so I met him that way. And also, we were involved at just after that time in something called Performance Cooperative, which was put together by a group of people trying to establish a centre in London for activities that were not accommodated through official channels, and we were trying to get money to put this all together. Unfortunately, it didn't work. And at that time, Ron was, I knew Ron's work as a filmmaker, although before that he'd been a sculptor. Not a filmmaker in the sense that one would immediately think of, but much more somebody who was using film in a curious, sort of intuitive, physical way to create environment or to make installations and so forth. The thing, what was really strong about all that was this kind of contradiction, really, a kind of love of the material, love of the physicality of film and so on and so forth, and because of knowing it so well, a kind of casual use of it. So there was an apparent contradiction in the way that he approached film, but the casualness only really came because of his real involvement with it and knowledge of it and feeling for it. And I think that's one of the things that runs through his work, is a kind of closeness to whatever he's using, whether it be scaffolding or film, you know, whatever it's going to be. And I think that's one of the things that one sees about Ron, is this kind of, he's a sort of private kind of person in a way, but he's very close to things and he feels things very, I think, strongly. I find his work really very, very much related to the immediate environment. You know, I mean, like, he lives near the Thames and so forth. Historically, you know, when he was young, he was involved in motorbikes and like machines and all of that. I see his work being very, very much related to a kind of the residue of sort of industrialisation of London, or probably even Britain, really, but London in particular. Structures on the Thames, bridges, and so forth. He's very responsive to what's around him, and I think it comes out directly in the work.
You mean also that he's not trying to make nice art pieces, but he's trying to show his feeling and bring over his feeling in a very
I think it goes back to what
lively way.
Yeah. It goes back to, I think, to what I was saying about knowing the material or whatever, and because of that, being able to use it in a fluid way, in a surprising way. And I think that the good thing about, one of the very strong things about Ron is this kind of apparent disregard for convention at certain times in relation to the work, because he has such a knowledge of feeling for, you know, either atmosphere or structure or whatever, a combination of various elements, and that this, when he has that feeling, the work takes on a sort of directness and has a surprising quality about it. I think the piece in Acme had that sort of quality about it. Some of the boat piece that we did in Acme had another similar sort of quality.
But that has also a traditional shape.
Oh yeah. Well, I think that's the other thing. If you look at his work, it's using what is around, what is seen in every day, you know, like it's a boat or it's scaffolding. It's the actual materials of living that he tends to be using. And that may actually come from film, you know, the film actually picks up from what's around and shift to picking up either identifiable objects like boats or identifiable materials, tubes, scaffolding and so forth, and that's then put into another sort of context, an art context. And there's a certain sort of power about that, when those materials are used in that way. It's also a direct reference to, you know, what's outside, what's in the street, what's in the field, what's in the water. And it's that kind of everydayness that's quite important. As
you
well.
Would call that also literally?
It's literal in one sense, yeah. In the sense that it, you know, that they're obviously the same materials, but it's when they work, it's when the imagination, when his imagination is manipulating those materials, those objects, in such a way that they cease to be literal, just literal. Of course, they remain literal on one level, but they become something else as well. They become metaphoric, or they move into a more ambiguous, ambivalent condition.
But in that way, I think the work changed a little bit. For example, the boat is really an object. The scaffolding is used as material. I think there is a relation to the building, but it's more that this is the best material to make a structure.
Sure.
And there is, for sure, kind of the name is then literally, perhaps. But what he builds is giving more a feeling what everybody can relate to.
Yes, sure. But at the same time, I think that as the boat is an object which has a function, or had a function in this case, the scaffolding is just material. Nevertheless, if you walk into the street, you see scaffolding being used, and there is its function at work, and it's that relationship that's really very, very interesting, it seems to me. Also difficult, because some structures, some scaffolding structures, especially holding up high walls and things, are very complex and extraordinary to look at. And it's a dangerous game to play with that, because, you know, like, what is the, you know, how it's necessary in order for the Baron to be able to take it away from that, to raise its level, as it were. And a lot of those scaffolding structures are extraordinarily exciting to look at. It's a problem with modern sculpture, surely, that if you go on a train from here to Edinburgh, you see so many apparent pieces of modernist sculpture on the track, on the side of the tracks, you know, tubes and blocks and all the rest of it. It's that sort of problem, it seems. I think he overcomes it.
Do you think there is, when we say that it is in a way literally, that it has humor in it?
Yeah, I think there is humor in it, sure. But I don't think it's... I think the humor comes not out of the literal aspect of it, but out of the conjunction of surprising elements with the water. The water trickling down through the structure is actually got a sort of humour to it. The long snaking piece of metal that was turning round, it was actually had a humour as well. Yes, I think there is a sort of humorous aspect to it as well. I don't think there's satire in it. It's not satirical. It's not. It's actually the work of somebody who refuses to be other than where he is. You know, he won't. His living situation is where the source of his work is. And, you know, he won't shift from there. And I think that's one of the very good things about him.
Do you think that he wants to change society through his work in a literal way?
I think
for example,
there must be an aspect of that to it, he's actually not acceding to the notions of hierarchy in relation to whether he would be entirely conscious of that, I don't know. It's a largely intuitive process that's going on, but nevertheless it does actually bring up a question. Is there by implication?
Yeah, for example, if he used the debris in the Thames, then it could say a lot of that, but if you take that as a serious point, then it's less interesting, I think.
Yes,
the word.
Yes.
He puts that so much backwards.
Yeah.
That's only a feeling.
Yeah.
Okay, a little bit humorous in it, but at the same time, it's a kind. Lots of his pieces have a kind of self-destruction. Do you think you know him very well as a person? Do you think that has to do with a depressive attitude, or is it just realistic?
I don't know how to answer that.
No.
I mean, that's very difficult to answer. Firstly, I don't really see the self-destructive aspect of it. That's the problem. You don't have to describe that.
Now, for example, if you have the power and the paper rolls, and they go and go and go, and then they fall down, that is he means to show the tension, but at the same time, he spoils the movement, and he spoils the shape.
Yes, I see that in a different way. I mean, the attempt with the paper is the attempt to do something near impossible. It's to take the risk to produce something extraordinary, which actually, because of the investigative nature and the project. Jets is probably the question of whether it fails or not, and in that case the throw of the paper only would go so far. So he's actually dealing with the qualities inherent in certain elements when they come into conjunction with one another and pushing them to the point of where of extremity to try to get the most out of that situation, it seems to me. Now, I don't see that as being self-destructive. I see that as a kind of almost like idealism, if you like, a kind of gesture to do something extraordinary.
And how do you see that he put the boat in pieces and built it up, and he put also he made also the tree in bits and pieces and built it up again? How can you see that in relation to what he wants to say, or to his own character?
The boat was rotting on the shore. It had nobody wanted it. It was just completely. It would still be there, no doubt, in worse condition than it was when he got into the gallery. There's something very pragmatic about the way Ron approaches things. There's a boat. He wants to do something with the boat because he has a boat of his own. He's in the sea all the time, in the river and so forth. How to get it to the gallery? Well, you cut it up. It's a long sort of intuitive process. In cutting it up, then he wants to, I suspect, deal with something to do with the motive power required to push the boat. It could be oars, it could be sails. In this case, it was an engine. So he deals with that vibratory aspect of the boat. The fact that it is out of the water is shaking to bits through the power that it needs. The water needs the third element, water, to push it through the water with this power. Right? By taking it out, he shows the actual sort of the real power of it, which is actually shaking into bits, and it's already rotting anyway. I don't know, that's how I would see that. I see it in some way like that. That was a very powerful piece of work, it seemed to me, because one, the boat is that boat, and most boats are rather beautiful in their shapes, but sometimes go through the water and so on. By cutting it into pieces and wiring it together, the shape of the boat is retained. At a certain point, it was extraordinary. It looked like a Viking boat. It looked like being in a gallery, looked like a museum, and so on and so forth. So one had all those sort of associations with all other sorts of boats and all kinds of histories and so on. But the vibratory thing was actually forcing one to deal with the boat in relation to what is required to push it, to force it. And I thought that was very, very interesting. What that says about him, I don't know. I can't answer that. I mean, I find him a very, not a secret person exactly, but a very singular person. Moving sort of secretly, picking up feelings and thoughts and so on. It's not a public figure in any sense. His work is very much the result of those sort of private moves that he makes all the time.
Do you think that there are a lot of romantic elements in it?
I mean, it's very difficult because I'm speaking as a...
I'm not writing it.
No, it's all right. No, I'm an artist, you know, too. And I mean, he's dealing with some of the elements that I'm dealing with, and or vice versa, I think, some of the things he's dealing with. And my work is very different. So the things that I'm conscious of, and that he's not conscious of, therefore I have a sense of criticism, you know. But that's really not very serious, is it? Because one obviously people are different. Yes, when it's really working, and when I sort of feel the process of the work, you know, from conception through to some kinds of results which are other than the actual object or process that you can see in process itself. Then I find the work, it mutes. The romanticism is muted, and I find it then at its strongest.
Do you think, if you see the line, that he is a thinker, or is he really more practical, trying to bring over feelings?
I think he's much more the intuitive person who's very practical and therefore very pragmatic. And I think that's where his strength lies, actually. I don't think he's... I don't think he would claim to be a thinker in that sense at all.
That's true, but you talk about the line and that makes...
It's a line which comes from the introduction of the use of technology, not industrial in the sense of machines, but the video, I suppose it is industrial film. It's when he uses the reproductive process that he looks at his work differently through the camera and so forth, and in other words, I think when he uses the camera in relation to whatever he's doing, something happens which makes the work come through stronger for me. In other words, I find the actual installations themselves really only interesting as part of that process. I don't see them as being things in themselves. As things in themselves, then I would be critical. As part of a process, I think they're right. Right to do what he does, and the introduction of the camera is very important. I think he's used it for years and years in one form or another, and he's really shifted from being a sculptor in the sense we would all understand to becoming known as a filmmaker, although he never really was a filmmaker. He was always a sculptor. still is a sculptor. It's just that the terms of reference aren't those that one would normally associate with sculpture.
I can follow you when you say that the fact that he makes film in his way has a relation to the work he makes now,
yeah,
and that he sees it that. But that you, I feel the work, what I saw, so lively, because you have to go into it, you have to feel the water in your face, you have to actually walk through the water, you have to. And I don't see you, what you mean by seeing it through the camera. It's not a reproduction.
No, it's not a reproduction. I don't see see, I probably disagree with you. I think we had a different sort of feeling for the work, in the sense that, for example, if we take the last piece with the water and so forth, sculpturally, I didn't find that very strong, because I couldn't find a relationship for myself with it. I just pushed back, and it was a very big thing, and you know, like, okay, so there are loads of big things around, you know, that one feels like that about. It wasn't strong enough sculpturally for me, but as something which will be in another form, you see what I mean, where the camera is used and so on and so forth, or comes into book form, or comes into photographic form. Then I see that the real power of the work is coming through his use of the reproductive process, where that phenomena is used as part of the process. And I think that's where his strength lies, quite honestly.
But he don't use himself to come.
Yeah, well, he does and he doesn't. I mean, he has done, and a lot, and now he's not. I don't think he has to use the camera. I think as long as he keeps, you see, for example, the project with you, what's he talking about? He's not just talking about the thing in the Thames, he's talking about a whole process which involves book and so on and so on. Now that's how I would say that Ron's work comes out at its strongest. You see what I mean? In other words, the thing in the Thames is not it only. It is part of it. It is obviously a vital component.
I think we shouldn't go farther into it because that's clear.
Yeah.
That's clear.
Yeah.
How do you see the drawings in this?
I think the drawings are only interesting insofar as they deal with, or might deal with, notions that of things that could happen. They're kind of idealizations of ideas, it seems to me, and that's as far as they go.
I think because you said that theory from structure and reproduction of the structure, what is given life on the structure later, or in that field, the drawings are rather dangerous because they try to do that in another way before, and they are too much on their own.
In that sense, I'm not so interested in them.
No.
I mean, they may be good or bad, but they don't particularly interest me. Underneath all this is this notion of Ron actually not conforming to a certain predictable path in the traditional sense of how one might be an artist, that is, producing images that are in a static form. Have the potentiality to reproduce, as it were, like film, like book. The drawing, in that sense, doesn't is outside of that sort of context, it seems to me, and personally I'm a bit not interested. Well, I'll try and remember that the piece that Ron did in the at Acme, which involved a long piece of what looked like hawser, wire rope, which had a sort of flexibility you get from those thick, maybe an inch and a half in diameter, which is important that he found it on the ten, in the tens. He found this piece of wire which, you know, it wasn't sort of straight, it was sort of slightly twisted and bent. And he brought it to the gallery and he put it on a machine which turned fairly slowly. And the machine was maybe about 9 inches above the ground. And it was towards the front of the space, and this long, almost like a line, what would be a line, like a drawing somehow, was articulated by movement. And because of the way it had been used before he got it, it was biased, prejudiced in certain directions, and so the turning of it wasn't entirely predictable. And as far as I remember, there was a lot of grease involved, and I think some rags and so on. Rags I wasn't so interested in, but it was this. The wire was sort of in a way anthropomorphized, became sort of animalistic, became, I don't know, like an eel, or it took on some other kind of quality, and it articulated the sort of the space of the gallery in at a low level, as it were, made one very conscious of one's height and and one's feet and the movement and so forth. And I thought that was really very, very interesting piece. It was probably one of the, in a way, least ambitious in terms of the use, the amounts of material used, and the sort of power of the sort of presence of the thing. But that sinuous sort of linear movement, and the use of these very humble materials, like grease, and I think I don't know, dust or whatever, was very provocative. Seemed to work very well. It brought up all kinds of peculiar feelings about dryness, wetness, flexibility, strength, rigidity, animalistic qualities, and so forth. It was very, very interesting.
Repetition.
Yes, a certain sort of repetition, but it didn't. It's the sort of repetition that one could bear for a long time because it was so fascinating. It's because of the peculiar bending of the wire itself.
And how was that related to the space?
Well, it was all the way up the space, right along it, up to a certain point, so that you could walk sort of right on either side of it, or you could step over it, or whatever. And it had this sort of odd greyness, sort of greasy, dark greyness. Sort of quality you might get in a mechanic shop, this sort of heavy grease sort of feeling and a slight dirtiness about it, which was, I think it was very strong. Yeah, it was very good.
Did you say in a few words what is the strongness of the work?
The strongest?
Yeah.
A piece or an aspect of his work?
No, an aspect. I think the both pieces for you the strongest.
I think the strongest quality in Ron's work is this expression of a kind of energy, when the work is at its strongest, there's a sense of not latent energy, but energy that's there and being used to some extent, but has much more power than is being used. It's this kind of imminence, impending power that comes. comes through his use of just use of mechanics, you know, to articulate something, right? And it which then has you know, connects with other sorts of energies, sexual energy, the energy of movement, of organic movement, and so on and so forth. This is where the power is, I think.
Each piece of work was different to the next one.
How long do you know Ron Hazelden, and what was the first striking point you found in his work or in him as being a student of him?
Well, I've known him for, I met him about 6 months ago. And when I met him, he visited the college and he showed slides of his work. And thing was that he took each piece of work he did, he took it to a conclusion. But then the next piece of work he did wasn't necessarily directly related. It was aiming for a different conclusion. Each time he, when he reached that conclusion, that was it. That was a finished piece of work. It wasn't a continuation from it. It was more. He went on to the next thing. I mean, he did a series of work which. Things revolved, like turning scrap, and he did things with pieces of wood which revolved, and then that was finished, and then he went on to the next thing, and then he went on to the next thing, and it's quite a fresh idea each time. It doesn't necessarily, as a lot of people seem to continue in the same vein, so each time you're never sure which, it's something new, but on the other hand he does handle it with great professionalism.
Yeah. Did he do that with people, or did he do that on his own?
Both. As far as I know.
How did it go? Would you describe it? I mean, how was the working together? How did it develop? Did you have a feeling you had to wait what ideas he had?
Oh, when he and I worked together. Oh no.
No,
oh.
In that first period.
Well, he showed the slides of the work, but it was like past work. It was work that had already been done.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if he did that with other people or not.
No, then I misunderstood. You said he's working with wood, and I thought he was realizing things with the students, but it was only a lecture.
Yes, he was showing slides of it, work that he'd done in the past.
And he told you about it, and then and for you was striking that he did all the
that's
different
right.
pieces.
That's right, yeah. Each piece of work was different to the next one,
Yeah.
Whereas quite often there's a vein, well, I mean, there was a vein of similarity, but each actual piece of work was very different. It had different concerns.
Yeah. What was the line you saw in it? What was...
It was trying to solve a problem, but looking at it in a very broad sense. I mean, just he'd look at the problem and he'd solve it in whichever way he thought was best, not necessarily in a narrow sense. I mean, he'd just look right across the spectrum, which could be either using motors or using lights or just using physical energy or using children.
Yeah.
And the materials varied from pieces of brushwood to scaffolding. So it was a very, each time you could see enthusiasm and energy going into the work. And he'd choose the things which he thought were best to get the effect he wanted. Which is easily said, but it's not very easy to do, to have that sort of broad mind and that
yeah.
sort of commitment with each idea.
And how did it work out that you helped him by building up the structure in the Acme Gallery, the Great Gallery?
Well, when he came to college, I was talking to him afterwards, and I was saying how I found his work interesting, and I got the college to contact him to see if it would be possible for me to visit him at his studio to see more of his work. I mean, actually see it as opposed to slides of it, and see how he works. And by coincidence, he was just about to start the work at the Atwick. So he said I could go along and help him, which was exactly what it was. It was it wasn't so much. I like to think I was much more than a technician. I didn't just actually help him build it. I mean, I actually began to understand it from the very beginning, from the very first idea. And Ron allowed me to make decisions when I was actually making it with him. And so I feel very much a part of what was made, as opposed to just helping, which anybody could help. You could say, connect that to that, connect that to that. Whereas he'd stand back and say, well, what do you think? When we reached, because there were quite a few stages which were critical. And it was a joint decision. I mean, obviously Ron had the overall say. I mean, it's his reputation, it's his piece of work. But I was allowed to get that interested in it and make some decisions which I hope were very important.
Could you take a distance of the work? I mean, could you see the work as from somebody else? Or was it so weaving into the building up together that...
No, I brought some friends around after it was finished, and I just couldn't understand why they couldn't see certain things about it, which they had great trouble seeing. Well, they did see eventually, but at first it wasn't as obvious as it was to me, because I'd actually been there when it was made, and I knew exactly what was happening. Whereas obviously somebody coming from outside, because it was quite complex, although it looked a very simple sort of grid system, it had a lot of complex things within it. Well, I knew they were there, because I'd been there when they were made. In fact, sometimes I'd actually, decided that should happen. And so no, I couldn't look at it as an outsider. It was almost as if it was a piece of my work. I mean, I felt very intrinsic towards it, very part of it.
Did you see other pieces of him now in reality? No, because...
No,
this is the first
time. Yes, because...
Did he describe the piece on the Thames to you?
Yes.
And what do you think?
Oh, I think it's brilliant. He showed drawings for the idea. That was before I worked with him when he came to the college. And that's how I got talking to him, because I was very interested in that. And there's lots of things that interest me about that. My college is by a tidal river, which is not as large as the Thames, but it's the same idea. And I've always noticed that at very low tide, things are exposed, which are always there, like there's a metal boat which is sunk. But you never know it's there until one or two days a year. The rest of the time it's there, always there. And the idea of making a rather conical shape in the Thames, which traps things, so it'll never be the same, because every time the tide comes in it'll clear it, every time it goes out it's going to catch things. And also the fact of actually building it, which would take quite a lot of time. And you're in a tidal river. Now, it doesn't matter how much you're getting interested in what you're building or what stage you're at. When the tide comes in, when the river starts coming in, you've got to get out.
Yeah.
It's like time and tide wait for no man. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You've just got to finish, get your tools and get away. Because the river's the ruler. You've got to work the hours that the river allows you to work. If that's at midnight, you've got to work at midnight.
And what do you think of the space? Do you think Ron can deal with that enormous space and make something what is in harmony with the space and at the same time worth seeing?
Yes, I do. Ron spends a lot of time looking at the river. He's very much in love with it, I think. And it's got the sort of perception which I think he already knows what should go there. He's chosen the exact site that he wants it. He knows the size that he wants it. I think those decisions have already been made. Obviously they will be adjusted, one would imagine, that when it's actually starting to be built, changes can occur to increase the harmony. But he's got a pretty good idea, and I'd be very, very, very surprised if he was wrong. I think it'll work.
And how did you think? I saw the graving dog here. How do you think that he make the construction into the space and in relation to the person who was looking at it? A normal sculpture, you have to walk around so that you can see it from all sides. Do you think he give the spectator a freedom of going into the structure or having all the possibility to see the structure, I mean to feel it?
I think a spectator coming in to see it, which had never seen it before, didn't know anything about it, would find it, it was very large, it was very solid, and you were restricted to the amount of movement because of its size. You had to squeeze past one wall, and there was water, so you didn't want to get your feet wet. There was access through another door visually, but there again, if someone really wanted to go right round it, it was actually possible to go right around it. It was even possible to climb in it, and there was nothing to say you couldn't. I don't know if anybody actually did climb in it. I mean, I certainly did, obviously, because I helped make it, and you had to at times.
But I mean it also a little bit abstract.
Oh,
I mean,
certainly.
Feeling space.
Certainly, I mean, it was particularly since it was wet. It was overpowering almost. I mean, the actual physical weight of it was nothing compared to its visual weight, because it was a mass of steel which was filling a room, which isn't a normal thing to do, to fill a room like that. So you've got to squeeze past. It was made for this space. It worked, I think, worked excellently in this space. If it had been a much larger room, then I think it would have had different problems, and I think Ron would have decided to solve them in a different way. I think for this space, I think it was excellent.
Did you talk a lot about, during the process of the work, about what you do with the space and how people will...
Very much so.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We talked a heck of it. I mean, while we were working on it, after we were working on it. I mean, any query I had at all, or anything that I didn't understand, or anything I had problems thinking that things might not be right, Ron was only too eager to talk about it. We talked virtually all the time we were together about it, which was 2 weeks. 2 weeks it actually took to construct. Right the way through, right from the very first day, we talked about everything.
What kind of discipline are you studying in the college?
Sculpture.
Sculpture. Do you think it is dangerous for your development to be so close with a strong artist?
I don't know. I hope not. I don't think so at the moment. Because, as I've already said, that Ron's an artist who, to my mind, isn't set in a particular mode. I mean, I think a year from now, 6 months from now, he could be doing something and I could see it and not know that Ron had done it. I mean, he's so broad, and that's the train of thought that I want, really. And that, well, I've got what I want to develop. I don't think it's as dangerous as it would be some other artists, where I think Ron's, once the Thames project's finished and done, which I hope it is at one stage, he'll just bounce back like a ball and he'll go on to something else. He won't be making structures in the River Thames for the next 10 years. And so I don't think it's a danger of narrowing myself, which it could be. I don't see that dangers there at all. I'm just learning a lot, which is a good thing to do at my stage.
There are so many artists inspiring by, say, Marcel Duchamp, and you can perhaps point out where that is, but that doesn't say that the work is not individual. Do you think there are humorous elements in it?
Which piece, the graving done?
Yeah. I talk about that because that's the one you are close with.
Humorous elements. I don't know. Well, I don't really know what. I don't think it's to be laughed at.
No, no.
I don't. There are things which people, I would imagine, people seeing it, walking in the gallery and seeing the object, being confronted by it, could put a smile on their face. Certainly the idea of spraying water and having a huge puddle in a gallery could be found to be sort of humorous, I suppose. I think that depends on the individual's interpretation of what they're seeing.
Yeah.
I personally found it extremely sad, but I mean that's just a totally personal thing.
Sad?
Yeah, very much so.
The whole feeling?
Yeah, you walked in and you saw this this one sort of cuboid grid supported off the ground purely in a cantilever way off the other. It wasn't physically connected, it was interwoven. And then you went to the back one, which was on the ground supporting the other, and it was dripping wet. There was the noise of dripping water, which suggested a rat was going to run out any minute. And I just found that very sad. It was in perpetual wetness. And there was that noise going on. I thought it was quite sad, and I thought that was, I was very surprised the effect the water had actually when it was turned on, because it dulled the colour, it dulled the tone, and to me it was quite sad. It was a graving job.
Yeah, and in that way you have also a feeling that the work works a little bit literally.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly I see the abstraction of it. I mean. Wasn't, but
no, it's abstract enough to have different interpretations.
Yes,
but certainly. The meaning of it is also kind of, you see it on the title.
Yeah,
it has. A
yeah,
kind
so
of,
I mean, Ron actually said at one stage that it was, I mean, the drawing that was on the poster and the cards that he did about a year ago, I think, called the Graving Dome. He said it was loosely. It wasn't a direct interpretation of that, but at one stage I felt it was a lot closer than he did to that drawing, or to an actual graving dump.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say it was a total literal translation, but I think it was very close. But in a way, I think Ron might have been playing with me a bit there. I think he thought it was quite close as well.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to lead me into... he wanted me to make my own decision.
Yeah. Do you see in the Thames piece a kind of similarities?
Yeah. From the drawings of the Thames piece, I mean, I believe it's going to be constructed out of scaffolding, so that's a similarity. It's going to be wet and dry, which is a similarity. It might, I would imagine, when the tide goes out, it's going to drip for a fair time, so it's going to have a... And it's going to be a very large... gridded mass, so there are going to be similarities, but obviously this one was enclosed in a room which had a floor, walls and a ceiling. The Thames one's going to be an open space, so it's got a similarity, but there's no way you could compare the two as that similar, because it's a different thing.
Different situations.
Yeah.
But you could could you say that this piece is a study for the...
Well, Ron had done the drawings, or done a few drawings relating to the Thames project before we started making this one. So, as far as being a study, how much consciously or unconsciously, I don't know. Only Ron can answer that, I think. Certainly the problems of creating scaffolding grids has been working with scaffolding in this way is going to be very useful to build the structure in the Thames. But as a study, I don't really think so, because the relationship is, because this is in a room and it's tight.
And it, and the result is a separate art piece, a separate feeling what it gives the public.
Very much so, yeah. Yes. I mean, it's got,
although it has relations.
Yes, it's a separate thing, which comes back to the earlier thing I said.
I know he's very busy with the Thames piece in his hand for, say, in the last half year, special because it seems to be a reality. It cannot be without that in his hand, being built up this, so there must be a stronger relation in trying working with scaffolding first, but that's very practical. But also the fact that he had water in here has to do with
whether see, I think it's very difficult to determine things like that which are actual conscious decisions and things which in retrospect you can look at it and say, well, he's got water dripping on scaffolding, so that's a direct relationship. It's a tryout of a tide going out, leaving scaffolding dripping. But whether that was an actual conscious decision or not, I don't know. I think only, I mean, like I say, only Ron can answer that.
Yeah.
I don't actually think that it was that much. If that were the case, if it was purely to try out the system of wetting and drying, there would have been better ways to do it. I mean, this was a piece within itself.
What do you think? I will not write everything down, so you can be honest and you can also say that you don't know. But what do you think, in a critical way, of his drawings?
In a critical way?
I mean, seeing them as artists, like he shows them.
I like his drawings very much. I mean, it was his drawings which... particularly the drawings of the Thames piece, which started the conversation between us, which is how we met. To criticise them, if criticising means find fault in them, then I just wouldn't like to do that. Not because...
it can also be positive.
Yeah, you can have constructive criticism, obviously, but I don't know, I just really like his drawings. I like his drawings very much indeed.
Do you think they are, next to that, they are sometimes sketches for the structures he realized, but do you think that they are basically different from his structures?
I see them, personally I see them as working drawings, which doesn't mean a similar in architecture, a working drawing. You don't necessarily work directly from a working drawing to the finish, whatever it is. A working drawing is to work out ideas, which you think in your head, and you can draw them, and then you get one stage nearer to an object that you're trying to create. It's a way of solving problems, to actually see them as lines or marks. You can solve things, you can work on it. So it's a stage between the actual creation in the mind to the actual physical creation. It's a bridge between those two. It's an actual working drawing. I mean, that's how I see them. Such as, I would say, the graving dock, although I don't think it was done as an actual working drawing. You could say easily that drawing was a working drawing for the piece, because they were actually quite closely related, or I think they were quite closely related, although they were very different.
In the most of the pieces of Ron, there is a kind of energy coming and also exposing. The energy is sometimes through a motor or through a movement by the wind or through a movement by water. In this piece it was more quiet. Do you think there is another energy in this piece itself? And could you describe it?
Yeah, I think there's a heck of a lot of energy in this piece, because you've got, I forget how much it is, it's several thousand feet of scaffolding which have been clamped together by several hundred clamps, and I think the energy comes from the actual physical making of it. I mean, it's just, to me, it was totally full of, it was full of kinetic energy by the actual physical making of it, which I think it just gave that feeling, because unlike it was such a close grid system that there was so many clamps and bars, far more than was needed to make a structure of that size, but it was the actual grid system. So there was the energy of the making, there was the that was the kinetic energy, there was the potential energy from the actual cantilever of one riding off the ground against the other. I mean, that's something I actually thought about and spoke to Ron about. That, I mean, I just think it was just full of energy, looking at it, although it was a static object.
And if you were, now you talk about building it up or the use of the material, but if you were an art critic, standing in the front and then moving along the side, how could you describe the energy of this piece without falling back to the only technical?
Well, I mean, hopefully an art critic would see the actual physical amount of energy that had gone into its creation, which is quite important, and also the potential energy. The actual potential energy of the piece itself, which is one mass off the ground supported by another, almost in a balanced situation. I mean, the actual scaffolding was bowing under its own weight. I mean, there's a lot of tension there, which is energy.
That's my, when I saw it, the fact that it was lifted from the floor was firm enough to see that it was really lifted and not, but you felt a kind of tension in bringing that up, and then also the edge made here,
yes,
was for me a kind of exposure of tension,
yes,
what is energy.
Yes.
And more than the water was coming so quietly, so
It was almost,
it was the only moving thing in it.
Yes, right.
What keeps in other pieces of him, the moving thing is giving the energy, and in this piece it was the structure itself, I think.
Yeah.
The form and the
I think the two combine nicely. The fact that there was this, as you said, because of the shape of the gallery, there's a twist in it.
Yeah.
There was also the weight of one supporting the other off the ground, and the actual scaffolding bowing under its own weight. But also the actual, the energy gone into its creation, which is very important, because if it had been very simply constructed, if it would just sort of instantly put together, it wouldn't have had this intention, which it obviously did have through the actual physical making of it. I don't mean actually physically making it is the tension. I mean the evidence of it being so made is attention within it.
And also because it's not a formal structure, it is a structure who came out of building it. Parts of it are formal, but...
Well, it's based on a formal grid, obviously, but...
based on...
It breaks away on, well, as you probably noticed, it breaks away on one side, and then the second structure breaks away on the other side. In fact, the second structure's the same as the first, but inverted, so the bars go behind instead of in front, and you've got a lean over to one side instead of the other. I mean, that's actually what happened. We made it so that the second structure, the one that's off the ground, was the same formally as the first, except for it was inverted, and then it was extended, and then it became the part of deciding when to break it away, which was purely an aesthetic consideration towards the end. It was just purely deciding which was the right decision.
Do you think that I've not answered something? Is there something that I wanted to say?
That's a difficult question.
No, it's just we can stop for a moment and then we stop.
Why I'm more than interested in helping on the Thames project, if and when it actually goes ahead. And I mean, it relates very directly to something I said earlier about it, and that is the idea of, well, obviously I like the idea. I mean, that's obvious. but the thing about it is that the whole structure depends on the tidal movement of the Thames, which is just something that's there. It shall be there for many years from now, and it's been there for many years. Many people take it almost for granted. Some people, their livelihoods depend on it. But the fact that the river comes in and goes out twice a day, and the depth of the water increases and decreases, to work on a structure which is trying to not just work in harmony but actually use that, is to me very much similar to the sort of work that I'm doing at the moment, which I'm using a tidal river as well.